Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes. And
Rhodes? Where we're going, yeah. We don't need Rhodes. Thank you. No, that's terrible.
I'm keeping it going. And we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the very best that life has to offer along its storied path.
We are covering food, alcohol, bicycles, alternative transportation, communications, the internet, newfangled puppy dogs, and
portaging.
Yes, indeed. No shortage of that.
Speak about the dog, because this is new.
Yes, so...
speak extemporaneously about the dog.
Speak of the dog and the dog shall appear. it's witty because it's... Anyway, Brock, you and I and our partners, our wives, live in a house we rent where we can't have a dog. We can't have anything, and that's never been a problem for you.
I am not especially excited about the prospect of having a dog.
On your best days, you're dog agnostic.
Dognostic.
Dog... Wow.
I lie awake wondering about the existence of dogs. Yes.
Actually, it means you don't lie awake. It means you don't.
Right. Anyway, I don't care.
We'll let the diagnostics out there redefine that.
Right. I'm like the honey badger about
Indeed,
dogs.
Yeah, you don't give a shit. No, you do give a shit about dogs. You hate them.
Well, the thing is, I don't hate dogs. I should say this for the public record. I don't hate dogs, but so many dogs are raised in a way inconsistent with their needs and with their temperaments. For example, our neighbor's dog. God bless our neighbors, whatever it is that they do, you know, for their dogs. But they spend most of their time outside barking at anything that moves because...
The dogs, not the neighbors.
Yes, because they're bored. So,
yeah.
That's an example of poor
dog
ownership.
It's obnoxious and they aren't responsible. Yeah,
right.
Poor dogs.
All right. So I've always been afraid of dogs around.
And yet, graciously, you've said, okay, now there's a possibility that we may get a dog in the future. I'd like to start over.
Yeah. Go for it.
So we were going to, we got the opportunity to move into the house right behind us.
We did.
Which is awesome. It's an amazing house that's not that much more expensive, and we got more room for more people to live with because we like living with people.
That's right.
And new landlady says, yeah, you can totally have a dog.
Dogs are fine.
And my wife is Candace. She's been faunching at the bit for a puppy dog.
So faunching, you say?
So yes, indeed. Okay. We went to the... Oregon Humane Society on Friday. She takes her clients there throughout the week often just to look at the dogs and pass time. And so she's been keeping tabs on when there's an awesome dog there.
So she knows when these dogs come around.
Yes, indeed. So she... whoa, what's that noise?
Anyway, I don't know. I'll figure it out.
So, yeah. She found the right dog. Her first name was Cubby.
Oh, it was Cubby.
Cubby.
I thought it was something else. Okay.
Well, her first owners named her Cubby, and then she was Jenny.
Oh, that's the story
and
I
then
heard.
By the time she got to the Oregon Humane Society, they wanted to spice it up a bit, so they made her Jammin' Jenny.
That which is admittedly terrible, right?
Oh, undeniably terrible. Who names their dog Jammin' Jenny?
Right. Well, anything that needs like a modifier. That's a name shouldn't have a modifier in it.
Well, it just sounds like a stripper.
Right, right.
Like, and now, Jem and Jenny.
She signs her name with an eye, with like a heart over the eye.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
So,
tramps. This dog does not have a tramp stamp. So, anyway, we changed her name to Penny. Penny Lane. She's kind of copper.
Oh wait, so she's a lady, not the tramp.
Indeed.
Okay. Bam.
So yeah,
first rate humor.
That's like 2 minutes of airtime to say, our house has a doggy.
Yeah.
And she's great.
And, well, really, the dog is so much better than I ever could have hoped that it would be. A Basenji, you said?
Basenji plus something else.
Plus extra dog in there somewhere.
It's sneaky,
like,
neighbor dog.
Double dog for your neighbor, or for your money's worth. what am I talking about? Anyway, everything that I've been afraid about a dog living in my house has been assuaged.
Ooh.
Is that how you say that word?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I my fears have been dealt with.
Yeah.
Because the dog doesn't shed, so there's not a lot of... I mean, it might shed a little bit. But they're like tiny little flakes of... It's like human dander.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of that. And it doesn't bark.
Much.
Right. Every now and again, it should be like... But that's just a...
That's... Yeah. Yeah. Basenjis don't really bark.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a splendid dog. She's got separation anxiety. If any of our listeners have any experience with a dog that has separation anxiety, we feel a little overwhelmed at how to, like, deal. She's 5 years old. So she's had this for a while, and we are really ready to like creatively address this. So we're listening to the Google for now, but if anybody else would like to get in there, please tell us your stories.
The Google knows all.
Yeah, I have a lot to learn.
Yeah, sometimes it's just hard to hear what the Google has to say. Indeed. So it's easier to hear from a real human being. So if you, a real human being listening to this, do know about separation anxiety with dogs, useful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Also, any good tips on healthy or sustainable or kind of the simple life solution for food for the dogs? Because most dog food is like grain plus industrial meat, like it's basically torture meat.
I never thought about that, because that's kind of a big issue for you. You care a lot about where your meat comes from.
Well, and just not eating too much meat. So I feel like I'm substantially increasing my eco footprint.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I want to make sure that, given that I'm going to do a bit of that, I want to do it as responsibly and compassionately as possible.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense.
So we're doing grain-free dog food for now, but I'd love to know what other people's take is on the simple angle on dog food.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Without making the dog vegan, because dogs aren't vegan.
They do need protein and
they
whatnot.
They do.
Right, and an actual animal.
They're omnivores. They're
animal,
not
yeah. Good times.
So that's you have a more interesting week.
That's
all
okay.
I've been doing
let
is taking
me do
care
this.
Of dogs.
This has been Dog Talk on the Sprocket Podcast.
Thank
you. So.
That's awesome.
Meanwhile.
How was your week, Brock?
My week was great. I actually picked up a gig, a second job, driving occasional runs for a party bus provider here in town. Mm. It's called the Cascadia Cruiser. You can find them at CascadiaCruiser.com. I talked to a guy, and he said, hey, you want to drive my bus? And I said, yes, I will. So,
if you know what I mean.
Yes. Well, actually, the funny thing is, I believe paying bass is referred to as driving the bus in some musical circles, and I myself am a bassist, and yeah, it was faded. It was in the stars.
You're just a bus driver.
And what do I know? So basically, what I did for the last three nights was ferry around a couple of partiers. It was a chartered group of about maybe starting at 35, 40 people.
And three nights in a row.
And what we did was we took them to see Further, which is kind of like the...
Further than what?
Further than the Grateful Dead, because the Grateful Dead is no longer together, but there's a lot of people that still like the culture and the music and all of the...
So really, they're the Grateful Undead.
All of the enhancements that go along with that. well done, by the way. So, yeah, we drove them from Southeast Portland out to the Edgefield McMenamins, which, if you're not from Portland and you don't know McMenamins, they do a fantastic job of restoring old properties to drinking establishments for adults. So
the mediocre to decent food, horrible service, and fantastic paint accoutrement all over the place, all centered around the Grateful Dead mythologies.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like their...
It's like the Scientology with marijuana, sort of.
Yeah. Wait, is this the Equinox or the what's the other one?
Yeah, this past weekend was the... Yeah, it was the Fall Equinox.
Okay. There we go.
I remember it meaning equal day and night.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was last week.
I never knew
the 21st or something.
Yeah. I never knew where that word came from. Now I do.
Yep. Spring spring and fall equinox are that. Yeah. And then solstices are the longest, shortest. Huh.
The more you know. So anyways, this is like the crowning point of McMenamin's year is this Grateful Dead kind of legacy band. It's a couple of members, I think, from the original band and a bunch of, you know, new musicians with him, of course, and all of these people showing up for that. And it's kind of like it always has been. There's people that kind of follow them around and they've got amazing buses and whatnot. And a lot of people walking around hoping that someone will gift them a ticket with their one finger in the air saying, I would like one, please. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and a lot of pot smoke in the air. It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
And so you drive this like what kind of bus is it?
It's an old Crown. It's a 1983 Crown, and
I don't think anybody listening knows what that means.
Well, if you picture like a bus that you would see in a movie from the 1950s, where it's all like rounded, it's not like a
like
big
the
boxy
bus that picks
thing.
Up Forrest Gump.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
So it looks like that. And basically, they'd started designing buses in the 50s or 60s and just never changed the design. So all the way up until this one was built, it still looked like a bus from 50 years ago.
Sweet.
So it's a biodiesel rig, and I really enjoy driving big rigs, and I really enjoy people, so this is like the perfect deal. Anyways, I spent a lot of time wrangling people.
With a bunch of Grateful Dead fans, and yeah, they're probably drunk, middle-aged, and high off their horse.
And I should point out that we wouldn't know anything about that, because we would not encourage or advocate the use of illegal drugs. However, we do have a cab permit, and you can drink in the back, as long as the alcohol doesn't come up where I am or leave the bus. So, yeah. Anyways, it's a fun job, and I had a great weekend. I was also up until like 3 last night.
That's crazy.
So, yeah.
Any memorable people on the bus?
Well, there is the one guy who would put two fingers together in front of me and say, cut the pickle, and then you would reach out and, like, you know, pass
slice
your hand.
Slice your finger through mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Fingers.
And then you go, tickle, tickle. Oh! So, yeah, that was fun. But, I mean, a number of passengers that would, like, you know, be friendly and remember your name, and we have conversations and all this, and yeah.
Did anybody do a play on your name?
No.
Oh,
as far
nice.
As I know. A lot of people call me bus driver because that's easier to remember. You know how it goes. Well, should we talk about like a couple
sorry,
of news stories?
Like,
no, that's okay.
Enjoying the week.
Yeah. It was a good week, and we got a lot to talk about. So here's your headlines for today.
Oh, Sunday Parkway.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Yeah, Sunday Parkways did happen, and I went out and rode the loop today. It was fun.
And yeah.
On my tall bike.
With the yard sign of a particular mayoral candidate.
It's true, yeah. Yeah, and of course the Sprocket podcast doesn't really promote or discourage any particular politician's platform, but I was out there, yeah, advocating for my own personal choice.
Yes, indeed.
So, yeah, good times.
all right, first up, from Stephen Ken Plan. American road signs use altogether too much text.
Yeah. And this
totally.
Yeah. This is a really interesting study.
Yeah, we need to be more like IKEA.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple pieces here. And IKEA does that pretty well, right?
Like, yeah. There's that weird little dude.
Yeah. Their little mascot that shows you where to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a comparison here. There's a couple of photos between, let's see, this one is in Berlin outside the American Embassy. And you've got like a right turn signal. And. There's a bunch of text that just showed up on the screen that I wasn't anticipating. That was exciting. Like a triangle in red. And basically, that's what? Like, you have to turn right and you have to yield? Something like that?
Slow down, yo.
Exactly.
And turn right.
Yeah, the same thing, I think, happening here in the United States where you have a rectangle or octagonal stop sign with the word stop inside of it. So it's not enough just to have like a red thing. It also has to have the English lettering that says stop. So just in case you weren't sure.
Yeah, so it's less conducive to international or non-first language folks.
Right. Yeah. And then the right turn, the sign for right turn only, it's an arrow kind of curving right, and then it says only underneath it in English. And I suppose, like, if you took away the word only, the meaning would probably still stand. But I had never considered this. I mean, we're kind of transportation wonks, but... the idea that, yeah, that our signs are over-designed in America or something like that.
No, the degree I'm getting right now is about semiotics, which is the study of signs.
Oh, right. You're getting your doctorate in this stuff.
In signs. And it's not specifically like signs in this sense, but signs of like what does anything kind of mean. And I would totally agree that we over-communicate. We don't trust a clear... pre-literate expression.
Like we need words because the words make us feel better. They're more comforting when the law is spelled
out.
Well, yeah.
No, it also means that you can't wiggle your way around it. Like we really are conniving little turds. Like I'm sure that's in every country, but we're just weird.
We are conniving turds. I have to give you that.
Yeah, there's a bit of that in all of us.
Yeah. This one here says right turn only, and there is no right turn like symbol or arrow.
It's those three words.
It's those three words. So you really, like, you have to be able to at least read English passively to even know what you're supposed to do at this intersection.
Yeah, which is really disrespectful and inconsiderate. Like, it's setting yourself up for accidents to happen.
Mm-hmm.
People don't read the language or have a reading issue. Dyslexic people would have... issues with this.
Right, right.
Maybe I don't know if dyslexic people can drive.
See, I don't know.
With dyslexia, excuse me.
Thank you. Jonathan Moss would thank you for that distinction.
Yeah, no, it's important.
And so would I. The idea that I don't know how dyslexia works. I don't know enough about it to know like what that would do. But obviously, like it's a problem with being able to comprehend printed text. So, yeah. The best one down here that it is in this article is there's a right turn prohibited sign. That's just an icon. It's an arrow with a big circle slash. And
this is awesome.
And then below that,
you guys have to click on the link to this.
Yeah, the sign says it's got the symbol of bicycles, just a bicycle on the top of the sign. And then it says, watch for prohibited right turns.
And it's in three different text sizes and scalings as well.
I think that's just to make it fit on the sign, right?
Exactly.
That's poor planning at the print
shop. Almost like Star Warsing.
It's like,
can we call that Lucasing?
Scrolling in on the screen,
yeah.
Or on the sign. And what I mean, the advice, of course, is good advice. Like people will always try in a downtown area to make a turn where they shouldn't make a turn where they're told not to. But the idea that you have an official sign that says, you know, people are not allowed to do this. Watch out because they might.
Well, the ambiguity is with the bicycle up there. Is that like saying bicyclists, comma, watch for prohibited right turns? Or is it saying watch for prohibited right turns because there are bicyclists over here, yo.
And they don't give a fuck.
Indeed.
That's an interesting distinction. I never thought about that.
Some people would say I don't have to pay attention to that. And some would say that that's like specifically telling a bicyclist what to do.
Right, right.
And that's legitimate wiggle room legally.
Curious.
So it's a bad sign.
So anyways, yeah, the author of this article is saying like signs should be way simpler and way easier to read.
Yep.
So there you go.
Yep. Semioticians should be in municipal governments.
That's it.
Oh, my screen went off.
Oh, okay.
Oh, got it. Next up from Slate.com, why you hate cyclists. This was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So you read this one, right? I only skimmed it, so maybe would you be able to give a summary?
No, I also skimmed this.
Okay.
But it was awesome enough to merit a deep read.
Yeah. Well, basically, they're saying what the effect heuristic is quoted here, a fancy way of saying that people make judgments by consulting their emotions instead of logic.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, the bent of the article was kind of like bicyclists should be doing their best to play nicely on the road with others. But we shouldn't think that that will make a big difference in how bicyclists are perceived.
Yeah, and part of it is we know what it is to be like almost all bicyclists have spent a chunk of their life driving cars.
Mm-hmm, right.
We know what it is to share the road. We know how inconvenient a bicyclist can feel. And so we perceive bicyclists not as some sort of nebulous other, but as someone whose situation I've been in.
Mm-hmm.
And because most automobile users have not been a bicyclist,
right.
an urban bicyclist,
mm-hmm.
they can't relate. And so they can only express this like precognitive incredulity and impatience.
Right. Like those damn people, for instance, here in Portland, we should license those bikes because they have no training.
Exactly.
They've never been behind the wheel of a car. They don't know what they're supposed to do.
Exactly. But most of us have our driver's license or have at least gone through that at some point.
Right, right. And like, even you, Brandon, you don't hold a driver's license currently.
No, I don't. But I've had my permit a couple times.
But you've had your permit. So you've been behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah, many times.
You kind of know how it goes.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, this is very interesting.
Well, it's just a broader like good lesson for the importance of, trying to indwell another person's situation gives you a deeper understanding of it than any amount of legalese or rhetoric on a bike, blog, or anything else can give you.
Yeah, and what the...
walk a mile.
The rhetorical straw man is easier to knock down than the actual thing, which is what our brains do with this affect heuristic sort of concept.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think I should be careful to be too shrill about car drivers because I've never been lifestyle dependent upon a motor vehicle.
So it could be easy for you to cartoonize
but it
drivers
be fair.
In your mind. Right, exactly.
It fair.
Yeah, but that inclination is inside of all of us.
Yeah, 90% of us, 99% of us have all driven cars semi-regularly.
Right.
And so can relate, but 90% of us have not bicycled regularly and so can't relate. So It's a weird catch there. So great things like Saturday Park or Sunday Parkways, like we have here in Portland.
Yeah.
Where everybody, people who just, you know, they clean out their Schwinn's that have gathered rust and they go on the bike ride with the family.
And there's
a great way to indwell that.
There's a lot of people out there on a Sunday Parkways event who don't usually ride as much, but they're like, hey, you know, street's all shut down. We could ride on this street. It's safe. It's not as intimidating because there's no cars.
Yeah. And maybe over the course of the next week, they'll actually try bicycling to get from A to their new B.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if that inspires, you know, if that kickstarts somebody's new habit, that's a great idea.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, hey.
You're getting more than your 30 minutes worth on me, buddy.
It's true. This is what we call podcasting synergy.
Indeed. And a really good whiskey sour that my wife made.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm drinking.
Tell me about this.
It's a whiskey sour with Seagram's.
Okay. Yeah.
And she made a simple syrup and lemon juice concoction to make the sour.
Nice. Do you prefer Seagram's for a sour?
I find that Seagram's is smoother than something like Old Crow while still being about the same price per ounce.
Hmm.
Maybe a little more. So it's a better mixing thing than Old Crow.
Yeah. Old Crow is really good for like drinking on its own. And even then, yeah. Like you have to kind of like the stabbing you in the back of the throat sort of sensation.
Yeah. Yeah. This was like 19 bucks for a handle of it. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's all right.
Well done.
Yeah. So, that's why I'm so, chatty.
Hyphy.
Yeah.
As it were.
Bike Portland.
Yeah. Yeah.
How one downtown intersection is working, -M- for everyone.
Yeah, yeah. And this is one, I'm just putting it up on the screen here now. This is one of those like time-lapse sorts of videos where all the people are moving really quickly. They look like ants.
Indeed. Yeah, if they put a, what do you call that, a pole focus? Not that. What the hell is that called?
Is it the thing where...
the miniature focus thing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, if they did one of those, it'd be rad.
Yeah, for sure. But this is like the most European intersection I think that Portland has, and perhaps North America, because we've got the streetcar, or as it's known in Europe, often a tram, and then we have Portland's aerial tram, which we gave that word to that tram. So we, I guess, you know, that's all we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Streetcar is more of an American word, I guess. But yeah, this is down at the OHSU lower building, and the aerial tram connects up to the hospital and science place up on the hill. Science place, school. and if I'm not mistaken, I think this is where our friend Logan used to work.
Tilt shift.
What was this?
That's the focus. It's called tilt shift. Okay.
Thank you.
Go on.
Appreciate that. And so then there's a couple of shots in this video as well of Kyle Johnson's business, Go By Bike, or I think that's gobybikepdx.com. Yeah, yeah. Right now, there's some images from the aerial tram going over the highway and everything.
I've never been in the big silver Tylenol. I really want to.
Oh, you haven't?
No. Yeah.
Oh, I've only done it once, I think. It's kind of fun.
We should, for the 100th episode.
that's what we're going to do for our 100th episode. We just get into like all these different modes of transport we haven't tried yet.
That'd be rad.
Yeah, yeah. What's another one that you haven't been in yet?
Well, that's kind of about all that's left. That and a Cartago.
You haven't been a Cartago yet, so maybe we'll do that.
That'd be really fun.
Right, right. Have you ridden the tall bike yet?
I rode it around the intersection.
Okay, yeah, you have. That's right.
Yeah, so you can get a shotgun mic on me and I'll talk for a while as I bike in a circle. It's going to be a ridiculous
episode.
There
we go. Yeah, yeah. What about a ferry or some kind of...
Yes, I've taken several ferries.
Right. Are there any of those around here?
You got to go up to the Sound.
Oh, okay. We could drive a car to go to Seattle. It'd be a 5-hour podcast.
If you'd like to sponsor that, please give $500 because that's how much we'd pay for that car to go.
Oh, geez. Yeah. So, anyways,
take it to Canada.
Yeah. having discussed many things far afield, our guest interview segment this time around is Kyle Johnson. He's the proprietor and launcher of Go By Bike, which is basically it's a bike shop and valet service. You'll hear in the interview more about how that works, but he kind of put this little video together that is really cool, just showing how people of varying modes can play together and play nicely. I should also say, Kyle, in addition to being the Go By Bike guy, we talked mostly about that in the podcast interview, but he also has been an Alice Awards winner from the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. Every year they have that big award show thing.
Yeah.
And he was the award winner of that a couple of years ago. I think. Maybe that was this year. I could find out real quick, I bet. And Bike Train, a superstar, as Jonathan Moss says. Basically, he helped kickstart some of this Bike Train stuff. Kids get into school by bike in a group as opposed to having to ride the bus or walking if that's too far. Mm-hmm. Providing alternatives and not, you know, so their parents don't have to, like, drop them off in the car. Because there's nothing worse for a school, really, than a bunch of parents cycling through the school's neighborhood, dropping kids off at the curb in their own individual cars, just because that increases exponentially every time that another car passes through the neighborhood. That increases the risk of danger to students or people of any age. So, anyways, pretty cool. And we'll talk to him more about that again. I did want to talk to him more about sailing, because he loves going out in the water with boats. So we'll have to do a sailing episode sometime.
I'll definitely leverage my emeritus host status for that.
You should. Well, cool. I think that's all we've got. So let's drop our headline stuff. That's the end.
A lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
And coming up right now is the interview with Kyle Johnson.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Kyle Johnson, the owner of Go Buy a Bike Shop and Valet in South Waterfront.
And we're here on location right next to the OHSU, is it the lower tower? I can't remember what they call this, but...
The lower aerial, bottom of the aerial tram, yeah.
Right, and so the tram extends from the South Waterfront District up here all the way up to the hill on OHSU, where most of the hospital stuff is happening up there. But I suppose you probably get a lot of people coming through for their daily commutes and possibly visitors to medical facilities as well.
Yeah, it's a very unique intersection. We're right at Moody and Gibbs, and there's a new city cycle track that they just installed on Moody here. So in the morning, the vast majority of all the traffic is bicycles, and then we also have the streetcar coming through, and then the aerial tram, which actually goes right above the valet, which can be a little bit frightening if you're, like, outside and there's this dark shadow that sort of comes over you. It's very reminiscent of, like, Independence Day or some invasion.
You kind of look up and, I guess, up yours in the words of my generation or something like that. It's passing over us as we speak. But it's a very unique sort of situation. There's not a lot of stuff like this in Portland. Do you find that is any sort of a draw aside from commuting? Does anybody show up here just because the tram is here?
Yeah, we get lots of tourists and a lot of very curious people that come by and just want to talk, and a lot of people that haven't seen this many bikes parked here. At this particular location, we probably get during the daytime between 300 and 400 bikes parked. The valet usually parks anywhere between 130 and 180 bicycles a day, and so it's a lot of bicycles being parked down here. It's pretty cool to see them all down here.
That's an incredible feat. So I'm curious, did you start thinking that you would be a valet service, or did you start just thinking you would have a bike shop?
Well, last year we started just as the bike shop, and then there was a different group that was doing the bike valet. And in the bike shop, it was out of the same trailer that we're using right now that I sort of renovated myself. And then this year, OHSU wanted to do the valet again, and I said, let's combine it with the bike shop. And it's worked out really well because now people, they can drop their bikes off in the morning on their way into work, and then we can work on them during the day when there's not a lot going on, and then they can pick them up on their way out.
Yeah, I was thinking you probably have, like, a boost to your business just because of the fact that this is on the way to work for most people, as opposed to having to make their way out of the way for work or after work to get their bike worked on. Like, this is a very convenient place for people to have that done, so... Do you see a boost because of that?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think it's very convenient, and people really appreciate that convenience, too.
Yeah. Well, tell me how you started with bicycles. What got you into mechanics in the first place?
I've never really been interested in the racing aspect or even the mechanical aspect of bicycles. I graduated from Lewis and Clark College in 2009, and majored in history and economics. And I wasn't all that into bicycling at Lewis and Clark. And then after I graduated, I interned at the city, the Portland Bureau of Transportation, for Greg Raisman and Mark Lear. And that's sort of when I sort of caught the bicycling bug. And it was really because of sort of their passion for bicycling that I really became to see it as this way to transform cities. And I also went on a trip to Europe and got to see what Copenhagen and Amsterdam were like. And just how bicycles can have this positive impact on cities and sort of transform how you interact and exist in cities and see cities, I thought was really cool. And so I wanted to sort of have that happen in Portland. And so after my internship ended, I started encouraging kids to bike to school using these bike trains where big groups of kids sort of all bike to school together. And I did that sort of as a volunteer position for about a year, and it was really successful and got a lot of positive feedback. And that community aspect, I think, really inspired people and got people on board, where you're sort of creating these communities of people that are all sort of can rally around bicycling, and that sort of grows off itself. And creating this community for people to sort of that are new to bicycling to sort of try it out and have some sort of educational resource. Because a lot of times we sort of think that, oh, if we just like build a cycle track or put in some more bike lanes, that's going to encourage more bicycling. And maybe in like the Netherlands or other places that have that culture of bicycling, that would be the case. But I think that we sort of need to foster that culture in the United States, because it really doesn't exist for a lot of people. And that knowledge, too, having people have sort of a resource where they can come if they have a flat tire or something and to learn about how bicycles work.
Yeah, both how, I suppose, how they work like mechanically and also how they work societally, just to figure out how to use this as a tool without like hurting somebody on the way. What about the cycle track here is really cool. I came in on this. This is actually the first time that I've ridden on the cycle track, just because I don't get through this part of town very often. But have you seen any examples of people using it wrong or dangerously, or do you think it's going pretty well? It's been integrated pretty well.
I mean, it's a vast improvement from what they had before, which was just a shared sidewalk. There's still been a lot of construction because they're putting in the new light rail system, and so they've had to sort of close off part of it, and that's sort of made it a little bit tricky. I think that it's a little bit tricky getting onto the cycle track, too. There's no clear side to sort of enter the cycle track. But I think that it's worked out really well, and it's definitely, I'm seeing a lot more people riding bikes down here because of it.
Yeah, I noticed just before I arrived and said hello, I was across the street and watching people kind of move to and fro, and it seemed like there's a ton of people on bikes. And just a couple of years ago, the last time I was here, most of the development had not yet been finished, and yeah, it was almost kind of a ghost town in a lot of ways, but this is a marked improvement, I think. Like, there's actually people using the infrastructure, and the infrastructure is here. Even though a lot of the buildings are still being built, it looks like the cycle track at least is here. And another thing that seems nice is that it's delineated. Like, you have the there's a place for pedestrians on the sidewalk, and then there's a place for bicycle traffic in each direction. Mm-hmm. Reminds me a little bit of Santa Monica. I was down there a couple of years ago on a bicycle tour, and they have separate bicycle tracks on the beach, like mixed in with the sand. There's like this concrete trackway that kind of snakes through the sand. But even with signage, it didn't really matter. You're on the beach. I guess you walk where you want to. So anyways, I'm curious, what do you do when you're not here? What, do you have cycle touring passions, or, are you a cyclocrosser, or, do bicycles enter your way or your life in any other ways?
Well, I don't have a car, so I just get around by bicycles. I like to drink beer a lot. I spend a lot of time doing that.
And what's your favorite kind of beer, by the way?
My favorite beer in Portland is definitely the Superdog by Lucky Lab, IPA. I actually have a keg of that on tap at my house.
Nice.
And I also sail boats. In college, I was captain of the sailing team at Lewis and Clark, and I really enjoy sailing around.
Nice.
It's a lot like riding a bike, in the sense that it's very quiet, and you also have to be aware of a lot of different things going on around you, and it's very meditative in that way, I think.
Yeah. I have a few other questions about the valet system. We kind of got sidetracked by all the other things I'm so excited about, but go for it, and when you come back we'll continue. I was just thinking, I used to work valet for a hotel downtown, and I remember, like, the nature of valet business is basically everyone comes at once and then no one comes for a long time. So what are the logistics of parking bicycles as a valet service?
It's very similar in the sense that we get these rushes where a lot of people come all at once, and then there's some downtime sort of in between that, especially with the commuters who sort of all have, I'd say between like 8 and 9 is the big rush in the morning, and then between 5 and 6 in the afternoon is a big rush. And then like at every hour or every half an hour, a lot of people come. And also with the tram, a lot of people ride the tram, and so they get off all together.
You got little bursts of activity every time it arrives.
Yeah, but we've worked out a really good system. We have these RFID tags that go on the back of people's ID badges, and they just scan those in the morning, and it sort of assigns them a parking spot. So we can just go 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way to 170 or whatever it is. And in the afternoon, they just scan it again, and then their parking spot number pops up on the iPod. We had some people develop an app specifically for the bike valet, and then we can just go find their bike. And then we have seat covers that are plastic bags that have the numbers written on them of each parking spot. And so in the morning, we just put that plastic bag with the number on their seat, and that keeps their seat dry if it rains, and also allows us to see which bike belongs to who.
Nice. And that... That's actually surprisingly high tech, I think, for what I was expecting. I hope that's not insulting, but just like when I think of valet, when I did that at the hotel, it was always just paper slips.
Yeah.
So to actually have an electronic system, it seems like that's probably far more efficient, and there are fewer things to get lost in the process. So,
yeah.
Have you?
As long as the electronic system doesn't break down.
Have you ever had problems with that?
Yeah, there's been once or twice where it's broken down, and we've sort of just, it takes a bit longer to get everybody's their bike.
Yeah.
But it's all worked out. We haven't had any problems with, over the past 4 months, I just added up today, since April 1st, we've valeted 10,650 bicycles.
Holy shit. that's a lot of bikes.
Yeah.
And it looks like when people are retrieving them, we're here in the afternoon, it's about 6 o'clock or slightly after now. You guys are retrieving them. Do you also park them? Is it kind of a drop-off and people leave them there? Or are people parking their own bikes in the morning?
We park their bikes.
Okay.
And we have these poles that we just rest the seat on. And that way we can fit a lot more bikes in a shorter amount of space than you could with a staple rack.
Right, and that's always the problem with the staple rack, is that even if you try and go, you know, head to tail with the bikes or something like that, like it's really hard to get two bikes to sit close to together, usually because of the handlebars.
Mm-hmm.
So you've found some ways around that.
Yeah. And sometimes we sort of have to pack them in depending on how many people we get. But I think that it's we've been able to fit in a lot more bikes in a smaller amount of space than with the staple racks, which we have right outside the shop too, for people that that maybe we're here from 6 a.m. to 6:45, and there's a lot of people that don't really know these doctors if they're going to be in past 6:45, and so they lock their bikes up out there.
Right. And so you said you got a contract with OHSU to do some of the valet stuff. They had someone else doing it before. Is there a cost to the user, or is this all covered by the university itself?
It's the valet is all free.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's been a big benefit for the Aerial Tram, too, because as soon as the valet started, they've seen a marked decline in the number of bikes that have gone on the Aerial Tram, and that's kind of a big problem because those bikes take up a lot of space on the Aerial Tram. Especially during the rush hour when the tram is completely full. It's nice not to have as many bikes on it.
Right.
So they appreciate that.
Yeah. I was in Colorado this summer, and we rode a couple of the aerial trams up to, like, the ski resorts up there. And those have, you know, like, a car every 20 feet along the cable or something like that. Mm-hmm. They're just packed to the brim, and you can move as many people as you want to with that. The one here in Portland is, are there two cars or just one?
There's two. Okay. There's two.
Yeah, so there's two cars, and there's limited space. So instead of being able to hop on each one with, like, your skis or your mountain bike or whatever, there's a small weight, and there's not too much room inside. So I imagine having the valet does increases the carrying capacity of the tram, and it probably makes it easier on everybody as well, so you don't have to worry about bike grease when you're jostled up against somebody else or something like that.
And OHSU also did a study of their commuters to sort of see what they thought was the what things sort of encouraged them and people liked the most about biking to OHSU. And OHSU actually pays all their employees to bike to work. So every year they spend about $250,000 just paying people to bike to work. You get $50 every 30 times you ride your bike to work.
Which is pretty fantastic.
Yeah. But so they have that incentive program. They have all kinds of showers and different bike facilities all over the campus. And there's also a lot of nice bicycle infrastructure around the campus, too. And so they did this study, and they asked people, like, what do you like most about biking to OHSU? And by a 4-to-1 margin, people like the bike valet more than even the incentive program. I was really surprised by that.
They like free parking better than actually getting paid to ride their bike to work.
Yeah. And, I think there's something that people really like about when they end their trip, sort of having this human interaction, and knowing that your bike is secure and safe and you don't have to worry about your lights being stolen. You can leave your helmet and your bag on the bike. I think people have really... sort of even exceeded my expectations of how much they like that.
Yeah, so as far as security is concerned, I noticed you have the area that the bicycles are stored in is fenced off. What else does security look like for you guys?
The area is fenced off, and there's somebody here, at least one person at all times, and we haven't had any problems with any thefts. We've had a few... patients that have sort of wandered into the area, and we sort of run out and sort of redirect them. Another thing is that after 6:45, when the valet closes and we close down shop, if there's any bikes left over, what we do is we have a combo U-lock. And we text people the combo code and then lock their bike up outside.
There we go. So if they do end up showing up late, it's not necessarily a problem then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice system. It seems efficient, well run, clean, safe. I'm impressed. So well done.
Thanks.
How about the? I'll go for it.
It's taken a lot of like sort of trial and error because it is a very new sort of business. There's only one other bike valet that I know of in the United States. The University of Arizona has sort of a similar thing. But they deal with about half the number of bicycles on a day that we do.
I was just thinking about being like in the weeds, as they say in the restaurant industry, or like over your head with work and trying to get maybe everybody's bikes at once or something like that. Have you found any strategies for dealing with that, or is that kind of not really a problem?
In terms of like repairing bikes or when they arrive?
I was thinking arrivals and departures, but yeah. Maybe if like everything happens at once and you're fixing a bike and you have to end up running bikes as well, do you ever have any like where it just gets to be too much?
Yeah, well, you definitely learn how to sort of multitask, and but during the rush hours, we usually have three people in the afternoon and then two people in the morning. So during that rush, there's not just one person there. So there's multiple people if somebody needs to is picking up their bike from us, they're being tuned up, and somebody wants to rent a bike, and then we have people picking up their bikes from the valet. So we also have loaner bikes for people that are free for people at the hospital to use during the day. We've got a folding Brompton, we've got a front loader cargo bike, and then about five sort of city cruising commuter bikes. And we rent them out on sort of long-term basis too, so that a lot of doctors that are coming to the hospital from like, or students from different parts of the country, they can use a bike while they're here.
Right.
And it's at a really reduced cost for, it's free during the day and then half price for the rest of the time. And it's $100 for 3 months to check out a brand new Surly Cross Check. So it's a pretty good
That's
deal.
Not bad at all, yeah. And, especially if you're coming from out of town and you don't have access to a bicycle, it's nice to have an option to rent one, especially if, like the Bromptons, for example, if you wanted to have something that was versatile enough to take into the office with you or to be able to carry up an elevator or something. That's nice to have.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering about unusually shaped bikes. Do you have any regular Parkers that have cargo bikes or anything else, recumbents, what have you?
Yeah, we actually get a fair number of those people because they, especially bikes with trailers on them, because they'd rather leave their trailers in the valet where it's being washed over as opposed to on the rack where somebody could just come up and take off the trailer and take off with it.
Right.
And so we have sort of a special area for those special bikes.
Yeah.
And then we have a few regular bikes that are also kind of special that we sort of have an assigned spot for.
Is it kind of like when someone brings like a Jaguar into a regular valet or something like that? You're looking for like the place with the most clearance and maybe where it won't get scratched or bumped into by somebody else.
Yeah, definitely. We want to make sure the Jaguars don't get scratched.
Right. Are there any bikes that come in on a regular basis that you particularly like? You're drooling over them or you're jealous of them or that sort of thing. You have a fond place in your heart for them every time they arrive.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We always talk to people about their bikes, and the owners are equally as proud about them as we spend drooling over them.
Yeah. I was curious, Portland is considering starting up a bike sharing program. Will that affect you?
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I think it'll definitely decrease the amount of bike rentals that we do. But I think that it's going to be a big boom for just getting more people to ride bikes in the city, and I'm really excited about it. So,
okay.
And I know that they're even thinking about putting a station right by the bike valet, which I think would be really great.
Okay. And I suppose as far as bike rentals are concerned, you still can't rent a Brompton or a Surly from the city bike share program. So.
Right, yeah. So we're sort of, and that was sort of the logic behind buying those bikes is we sort of wanted to diversify because we knew that the bike share was coming in.
Yeah.
And so having some unique bikes and nicer bikes than the bike share thing.
Yeah. It's kind of like, have you heard of Get Around, the car sharing service where you just rent private cars? Like, you know, somebody has a minivan in their driveway and they say, hey, you can rent this for, you know, $5 an hour or something like that. I think one of their big pushes was having like a Lamborghini or something lit, or maybe it was a Tesla Roadster. Anyways, they put that up as like, hey, you know, you can rent this and you should use our service because nobody else is renting a Tesla. So it's probably kind of like that with a Brompton or a Surly or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah. How long have you been in Portland?
I've been in Portland for about 7 years now.
Yeah.
I'm only 26 years old right now. And I couldn't imagine living in another place.
The place gets in your blood, I think. Have you seen it change in that amount of time?
I've seen the number of people that ride bikes has definitely increased. And I think that it's exciting to see sort of the development of the neighborhood greenway system around Portland, but I definitely like to see more sort of separated bikeways around, especially the downtown area. I don't think that has changed fast enough.
Yeah, not much changes downtown, and I think it just because it's so dense and there's so much infill, you've got less space to work with.
So many different interests, I think, too.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess business is always a concern. Like businesses that own a stake in the streets downtown are always concerned that, you know, if something changes, that their business is going to change. And so it gets sticky. But
I think one of the things that I've seen is in Portland is that over the last 7 years, the argument around bicycling and sort of the cultural meme and mindset, I think, has changed and become, and the narrative around bicycling has changed a lot. From maybe 7 years ago, it was much more just these critical mass people to, oh, now it's sort of everybody. And there's not just bicyclists, but but there's people that ride bikes sometimes and drive cars sometimes, and that we should have some options for everybody. I think that narrative has changed, which I think is really interesting. And also the kinds of bikes I think that people are riding has also changed. And there's a lot more just like crappy utility bikes as opposed to really nice bikes. I grew up in Seattle, and in Seattle it's always very different when I go there, and there's just a lot more spandex and really nice bikes, a lot fewer people riding bikes, but it's starting to change in Seattle too.
Yeah, I actually grew up outside of Seattle as well, and the one difference I've seen between Seattle and Portland is that it seems like Seattle, maybe just because there's more space and the population is bigger, it seems like they have more like off-road separate bikeways and paths, as far as Portland only has one or two of those, but Seattle has an entire network of multi-use paths. You could go out and ride for a day and never touch an actual roadway shared with motor vehicles. So, yeah, did you have favorites up there when you were growing up?
Well, the Burke-Gilman Trail is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I forget how many miles it goes for, but I actually live like two blocks from the Burke-Gilman Trail.
Yeah.
And you really sort of take it for granted when you live next to a trail system like that.
It's like having a swimming pool in your backyard.
Yeah.
The Burke-Gilman also connects now to, is it the Sammamish River Trail or something like that? Like, you can go up around Lake Washington, but then you can also trace it out, like, a long ways inland and everything. It's really phenomenal. And I grew up using the Interurban Trail, which goes down the King County, South King County Valley, down towards Sumner and Puyallup. So, yeah.
And the Burke-Gilman Trail also ends at the Red Hook Brewery, which I think is a stroke of genius.
So you can get, you can get whatever you want at the end, which is, that's, I haven't actually been to the Red Hook Brewery yet, so I gotta check that out next time I'm up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as maybe other simplifying your life, like you mentioned, you don't have a car, and how long has it been? Have you ever had a car, or did you sell it at one point, a decisive stroke of genius?
So yeah, I've never had a car in Portland, so the last 7 years, and it's been interesting sort of running a business without having a car, because I have to carry a lot of stuff around sometimes, and it's been challenging at times, but I use the car share. And I can carry a lot of stuff on a cargo bike too, so
right. That
works out pretty well. It's an adventure. It makes life more interesting.
Yeah. What's your cargo bike of choice?
I used to have a long tail Kona Ute.
Oh yeah.
And I found that just kept on tipping over. And so when we started doing the valet, we got a front loader Setma cargo bike, which is made by a guy who used to live in Eugene. I think he just moved down to Los Angeles.
Yeah, Lane King. We spoke to him I spoke to him like in the spring, and we aired the episode in like June or July. But yeah, he's fantastic. He's great. And they all come apart in the middle, so you can pack them around.
Yeah, it's so much better having a front loader cargo bike as opposed to a long tail bike.
Yeah,
you can put a lot more stuff on it, and it's a lot more stable.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to someday being able to afford some kind of a long john. But yeah, did you participate at all in the disaster relief trials this last spring?
No, that was before I had the the Setna.
So this is a brand new acquisition then. Yeah. Well, next year you'll have to, there'll be a team Go By Bike or something.
Yeah, definitely.
I assume the inspiration for Go By Bike is the sign on the other end of town at the train station that says Go By Train.
Mm-hmm.
The font and the graphic design here are very similar, but was that it?
Yeah, that was. I sort of wanted to create like a landmark, like the Go By Train sign.
Yeah.
And the Go By Streetcar sign. And so we get people all the time that come by and take pictures. And actually, the sign was featured in the Bicycling magazine when Portland was named the number one bike city. They used a picture of our sign in the on the website.
Yeah. Is that just this year when we reclaimed the title?
Yeah.
Because we lost it for a year, and everybody was very upset. So what can you do?
And
I guess you try harder and get it back.
And actually, one of the reasons that they listed for us getting the number one spot was bike valet, bike trains, and then bike boxes. And I've had my hand in all three of those things. So.
Have you been involved in bike boxes as well?
Yeah, when I interned for the city, I helped sort of pick some bike box locations.
Nice. Which ones are you responsible for in particular?
I could. It would be very inaccurate for me to claim responsibility for any of them.
Okay. Right, right. But suffice to say, you dabbled.
That, I dabbled.
Fantastic. Yeah. Do you remember the whole thing about what was it? There was the question about which color they were going to be, and people were afraid if they were blue that people might mistake them for handicapped parking spaces.
I think that was before I sort of got into them. Yeah. But
it's a couple of years back, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that now the green is. Been proven to be a superior color.
Yeah, and I'm impressed. The what do they call the plastic beading that they melt to make the? It's not just paint. It's like a some sort of
thermoplaster. Yeah.
Thermoplaster. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's holding up well. I'm impressed. So for your part in that, we thank you.
It's a very little part.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to kick in? As far as you mentioned, you're a big fan of Lucky Lab beer. As far as simpler living, is there anything else that you enjoy or that you're an advocate for?
I think getting in a sailboat is a pretty great experience.
Right,
I think more people should do. I like to see more sailing. When I was in Seattle, there's a lot more sailing there, and I ran a sailing camp for kids, and I really enjoyed that.
Right.
So I would definitely encourage people to get a sailboat.
And it's a lost art. It's the sort of thing that, like, most people don't, like, if they're going to go out in a boat, they'll have, like, an outboard motor or something. But being able to use the wind itself, we could do a whole show on that. Uh-huh. Just being able to use that in different ways. I assume now you're a master at tacking.
Yeah. And also when you're sailing, you have to sort of rely on the environment and sort of be humbled by the environment, too.
Right.
The wind and the waves and the water. And I think that that mindset is also kind of a fleeting art too.
Yeah. And that and knot tying. I'm terrible at knot tying. So no, seriously, let's earmark that. We gotta have a show on sailing someday. So we'll come back to that at some point. Well, thank you, Kyle. I appreciate your time. And again, where are you located, and how can people find you?
We're located at the base of the Aerial Tram in South Waterfront, by the intersection of Moody and Gibbs. And we're open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 6:45 p.m., which I also think is the longest bike shop hours of any bike shop in Portland.
Yeah.
Or maybe America, who knows?
Yeah. Websites, internet.
And then we have a Facebook page, and then also a website, gobybikepdx.com, and our Facebook page is, I think, Go By Bike Shop.
Fantastic. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Fuck it. We'll do it live. Fucking thing sucks. Has anybody ever seen that?
Why are we recording this?
I don't know. Bill O'Reilly flipping out because the teleprompter is weird.
Everybody should watch that and then listen to the rap video.
Oh, yeah. The dubstep remix was my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is the Sprocket Podcast. So we've got some mail. Are you prepared? I'm sorry, I should have prepared.
I didn't
you
know.
For that.
I asked why you were recording because I didn't actually know.
Oh, right. Yeah. This is the end of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And we talk to people before we let them go.
Yep. All right. You have the mailbag noise?
Oh, sure.
You've got mail.
I can't believe I invited that. Michael Anderson submits info from Chris Smith on last week's topics. North of Burnside in the Northwest, still of Portland. Still does not have meters or permits other than event day permit system for soccer games. No paid parking yet, although it's on the mayor's bucket list.
And this is kind of like a submission of corrections or like things that we should have addressed in the Portland Crossover Paso podcast, but we did not.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah. I can't talk pretty.
His second bullet point is Open Plans is doing a mobile app, Kickstarter funded, for a trip planner. That would probably be the place to get an option put in for whether or not to include the 4-minute buffer that TriMet automatically assumes that you're using in its trip planner. Third bullet point, I tried to make a big push for telecommuting part of the Portland plan, but didn't get a lot of enthusiasm. The key policy piece, however, is probably the city's broadband plan, which actually got done a few months before the Portland plan. The other piece would be a lead by example effort by the city and other governments.
And lastly, the transit surfer, which I think was just a simple way to get your arrival times and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's
without
great.
Having to wade through TriMet's system. TriMet's system is pretty good, but
it's good to have a little shortcut on your whatever.
An easily bookmarked sort of piece of internet.
Yep.
Yeah.
upcoming shows.
Yeah, yeah, we got a couple. Oh, you know what? I said that Kyle Johnson is here.
I wasn't going to read it.
Oh, sorry. That's today.
Well, next week, we've got Tammy Strobel and Logan Smith from RowdyKittens.com. We're going to hear how their new settling in is going in Northern California. On the 14th, Chris Anderson by Builder by Bike and Joshua DePerry from Plumbing by Bike are going to come by and talk about the convergence of
cargo bikes and business.
Heck yeah.
And like industrial business.
That's going to be such a good episode.
I'm really excited to hear about this.
And finally, the 100th episode, my final episode as regular co-host. And we'll see. We may be broadcasting from a tram.
We may, very well may
be. We may be eating ham.
Would you, could you in a can? Or we're sorry.
Only maybe a single gram.
There you go. Yeah. Well done. And lastly, let's see, what was the week after our 100th episode is Bill Lasher is going to tell some stories about Amtrak and riding on that. So, yeah. Lastly, our Indiegogo fundraising campaign, we're over halfway to where we want it to be.
We have a sound effect for this.
Oh, we should. I'll tell you what. Indiegogo. Making it happen for us. We appreciate that. But yeah, we have paid for all of our hosting bills, which is great. I'm also going to have Colin, the proprietor of our new podcasting host site. We're going to talk to him for a couple minutes and just let you guys hear him talk about how great his thing is, because it is admittedly great. Also, he likes bicycles. And yeah, if you would like to make a contribution to our beer charges, we're hoping to buy beer for every guest that comes in and treat them lavishly as we should. And then if we can get all the way to the $500 mark, we are going to have new headphones for everybody, because our headphones...
Not every new guest, but...
Oh, right, right. Yeah, they don't get to take them home. Yeah. So, hey. Anyways, that's a show. That's a wrap. And thank you so much for listening. We will see you all next week. Are you prepared for the credits?
Oh, I sure am.
All right. Fantastic.
Thank you for joining us once again. This has been our 97th episode. You can email us any thoughts you've got at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at us at sprocketpodcast. Phone us at 503-847-9774 or visit us on the web at thesprocketpodcast.com for links, info, and more. Thank you so much, as always, to Ryan J. Lane, who provided our intro and outro music from his fine, independently released 2009 project, Conversations of the Leisured. Find him online at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Our new segment music is provided by Hurtbird, and you can find them on iTunes or hurtbirdmusic.com. This has been the 97th episode of The Sprocket Podcast. I'm Brandon.
I'm Brock.
Bye.
Booba Shabaya.
There's nothing different on the board. I hear myself a little better.
Really?
Oh,
maybe I turned you
maybe
up a bit.
It's the whiskey.
That's possible.
This isn't going in the show, right?
Of course not.
Good. The comedian thing where I have a relationship with the microphone.
You kind of swing it away.
I draw it away. I have something to say.
So what's the deal about airplane food, eh? Little tiny packets of peanuts.
Oh, what's the deal? One of the grape nuts. I open the box. No grapes. No nuts.
yeah, let's record a show.
Okay.